Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.
All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers? What the fuck buddies? What the fucking ears? What the fuck nicks? What the fucktresses? How's it going? I am Mark Maron. This is my podcast, WTF. Welcome to it. Hope you're okay. I am okay. I'm all right. I've been doing coffee on and off. Yeah, I still have a coffee sponsor. I don't do it. It's sort of like a given, but justcoffee.coop still sends me a couple of bags, three or four bags a month of coffee just from, you know, years of that loyalty, that dynamic that we had forever. I've always got some coming in, and I hadn't been drinking it for a while. I've been using it for barter, gifts and barter. Hey, you need some coffee, pal? Here you go. I'll give you two bags of coffee and these two records for those two records. Yes, actual barter down at Gimme Gimme usually with Dan down there. But now I'm sort of back on it. I'm having a little bit of coffee here and there. And it's amazing how quickly it just creeps up on you, man. I'd forgotten what it's like to be fully capable and jacked out of your brain for some excitable and excited conversation in the morning. But I'm starting to feel that a little bit again. I've been drinking like a little bit of coffee in the morning, then tea later in the afternoon. But I can slowly feel the coffee just creeping up on me a little bit. John Goodman is on the show today. And what a nice fella. Had a nice kind of weighty chat with John. Great guy. Obviously, you know him from everything. He's currently on The Conners. But you know him from the Coen Brothers movie. You know him from Roseanne. You know it's John Goodman. And I was thrilled to talk to him. So, trick or treat, how was it for you? Oh, I haven't talked to you since the special. Let's start with trick or treat, and then I'll go back a bit. There's a couple of things going on, and I'll tell you exactly what went down with the special. But I bought a ton of fucking candy. Good stuff, too. I don't fuck around. I don't know what you like, but I know what's good, and it's probably better than what you like. I'm full on, you know, I got a full bag of Reese's, glow-in-the-dark Reese's. It's just the packaging. And then I got a bag of, what was in there, Twix, Snickers, Three Musketeers Caramel, and then another kind of Snickers. Pretty good. Solid. But I, you know, kids started coming, man. I got back in time. I had the big bucket of candy, and they started coming, and I thought, like, I got to get through this because I cannot have any of this. My agenda on Halloween was to have no leftover candy, and I thought it was inevitable that I would have leftover candy, but I really couldn't have it in the house. So when they started coming at 6:30 or so, I started giving these kids like three each. Three or four kids would come, three pieces of candy, two or three pieces of candy, and then all of a sudden they just kept coming. I had like 30 or 40 kids and their parents. Some really young kids with their parents. I was just wearing I was wearing my workout clothes, actually, because I'd just gotten down from the mountain and I cooked dinner, and then they started coming, so I didn't change, and it was very cute. All the costumes were cute. The parents' costumes were cute. But there was one kid who came with his parents, and he was holding some sort of thing with a blinking light on it. I don't remember what. Maybe it was the actual basket that you put the candy in had some sort of light on it. But I walked to the door in my shorts, and the kid could see me, and he was terrified. I had no costume on, and I could see this kid must have been maybe three. And I just came running up to the door, and he backed up. And I was like, what? Take it easy, kid. You know, and I opened the door and gave him the candy, and he's still looking at me like, what the fuck is this guy? And eventually I just said, oh, you look so cute, and was nice to him. And then he was like, the light, and he kept pointing to the blinking light, and I think he overcame his fear, and we He wanted me to know and see and acknowledge the light that he found so much joy in. And I did that, and I felt better. Didn't want the kid leaving scared. So what's the point? Point is, I held back like 5 pieces of candy because there were large groups of kids coming to my door. Some of them a little old for the trick-or-treating, I think, to be quite honest with you. And I didn't want to have another group come and then come up one short for some kid. Because I, for some reason in my mind, I thought, like, I don't want to ruin some kid's life. What if some 3-year-old comes up and I don't have any more candy? What am I getting? Do I want to be that memory? Do I want to be that disappointing guy? Do I want that to be stuck in some kid's like, it's really going to make that big a deal? Christ, it's not emotional abuse. It's just a grown-up out of candy. But I held back 5. And that was it. And I threw them in the freezer. And the next night I ate them and they were so fucking good. I wish I'd kept more, but I'm glad I didn't keep more. Whatever, folks. That was Halloween. Went well. The other thing I want, again, I should fucking write him an email. I must have his email. Got to thank Ken Burns for this country documentary. I finished watching it, all 8 of them. They're about 1.5, 2 hours each. And it's just one of those things. Like I said, I had some country records, but I had no context. And now I have a whole new pantheon of magicians and wizards to be emotionally engaged with their stories. And I'm talking about country music performers and, you know, it filled with wonder about their music because now I have a context for them. Now, I told you about Jimmy Rogers and the Carter family, but, you know, I went out and I chased down some Bill Monroe records. I downloaded the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band's May the Circle Be Unbroken because it was them pulling some of the old timers in, Roy Acuff and Doc Watson and Vassar Clements and Maybelle Carter. And I'm reinvested in Dolly Parton. I just picked up another George Jones and Tammy Wynette record. I pulled out my Louvin Brothers record. I pulled out my Earl Scruggs and Lester Flatts record. And now I'm invested. So thanks again, Ken Burns, for giving me this whole, it's just a whole world that like I feel connected to because there's no country without blues and there's no jazz without blues and everything sort of this, it's all kind of swirls together. And I'm thrilled about it. I'm thrilled to have this backdrop, to have these people sort of be real people in my mind as I listen to their music now. So, the special. As many of you know, last week, it took months, years even, over a year leading up to this taping of my new Netflix special. And, you know, again, apologies to Boston for not being able to do it, but we chose the Red Cat Theater here in L.A., which only seats a few hundred people. It's a large black box theater, they call it. And we built a beautiful set for the show. But my one fear going in, you know, and this happened after the fact, like I knew we would make it look great, which it did. And I knew we could do all the things we wanted to do with the camera, which we could. But my fear was that this was one of those theaters where people, it's a type of theater where they do experimental stuff. It's a type of theater where, you know, it doesn't have the big proscenium. It's not a huge theater. It's a black box theater. And when you go to a black box theater, you're waiting for something intense. You're waiting for something intimate and impactful. You're waiting for, you know, something heavy. It's not a funny space. Now, I'm not saying that the larger theaters, the proscenium theaters, mostly vaudeville houses and old theaters and cities, you're not expecting something, but they all sort of have their dug-in personality, whereas a black box is something you can make whatever you want. But there's also, I just felt there was going to be some expectations and some, not apprehension, but just a kind of intensity to the space itself that would might stand in the way of laughter. But it was Wednesday night, and there was a 7 o'clock and a 10 o'clock taping. Now, a 7 o'clock show, even on a Friday or Saturday, that's a, you know, people got to come right from work. And I didn't know who was going to be there. And we only made about 200 and change, you know, maybe a little over 200 seats available for each show, which is very intimate. But man, you know, I'm all jacked up. I got my new clothes on. You know, we're backstage. We're doing it. We're doing sound checks. I got Luke Schwartz opening for me, getting people warmed up a little bit. And then you go out and you got all the cameras and it's a TV taping. And, you know, I've been working this shit a lot. And I go out on that 7 o'clock show and the audience wasn't bad, but my fears about the space were realized is that, you know, they were present, but they weren't laughing enough. And as a comic, you kind of need the laughter to get a roll going. But the thing was, is I didn't feel like I got over the hump. And it was nobody's fault, you know, but like in between shows, I was kind of frustrated. I was like, I'm glad we have another one. I hope it goes good. But everybody there, Netflix people, everybody's like, that was great. That was great. That was great. And I'm like, thank you. It was great. But in my heart, I was like, it's got to be better than that. I got to connect better than that. Why the fuck did I do it at this theater? Is this next show going to be a problem? Am I fucked? Am I going to have a mediocre special? I know it's going to look great, but I don't want to have to, you know, sweeten it or add laughs or any of that kind of shit. Like, what? Fuck, man. I was a little freaked out, folks. So going into the second taping at 10, I was like, God damn it, man. I got to stay open, stay even more open and fucking connect with this, deliver this shit. And it was great. The second show, it rolled. I improvised a bit. I got loose. I kind of, you know, was myself more. And maybe that's always the way it goes. But thank fucking God, even if I don't believe in God necessarily, thank the universe for doing. I didn't to walk away from a special taping and not feel like you got it. What a nightmare! So it went good. I think it's going to be pretty. I think it's a pretty powerful bunch of material. I take it to the edge. I take it to the edge, folks. So, listen, before I bring up John Goodman, I wanted to read this email. I thought it was nice, if I could. This is from Allie. Subject line, Argus. Hi, Mark. I am halfway through your episode with Argus Hamilton, and I wanted to share a small story with you. I saw the Monday newsletter announce that he would be on the show. I was very happy to see you'd finally been able to get him on. Argus played a small but important role in my early teen life. When I was 12 or 13, 1985 or 86, my dad checked into the care unit at Cedars, 30-day program for alcohol addiction. I'd go visit him, and while I liked visiting him, I started asking to go so I could talk to his roommate. His roommate was this funny, nice guy who talked to me like I was an adult, didn't talk down to me, and was genuinely interested in chatting with his roommate's daughter. It will come as no surprise that this was Argus. I think he finished the program before my dad did, or vice versa, so at some point I knew I likely wasn't going to see him ever again. His parting gift to me was a Comedy Store t-shirt that I wore all the time. It was pretty much my favorite thing for a long time. I still have it somewhere. At the time, I didn't know much about the Comedy Store, just a little I'd heard from Argus. And obviously, it wasn't until years later I came to learn about its history. Over the years, I'd see his name somewhere and was happy he was A, still alive, and B, still working and doing what he loved. And I always looked forward to hearing guests on your show or you mention him. So thank you, Mark, for finally having him on. The ride to work this morning definitely sparked a strong memory. And that voice, it's exactly the same as I remember. Best, Allie. Thanks for that email. That's so nice. I like hearing about things that, you know, have an impact on you when you're younger and they're good things. And then they come sort of full circle. I'm happy I had him on. And he told me he's getting great feedback from it. So that's nice. Now, look, folks, John Goodman doesn't talk much like this in public. He doesn't do a lot of these kind of long form interviews. And it was really, you know, and he's such a sweet guy, such a memorable guy, such a, you know, a huge talent, and sort of a part of all of our lives. If you've been alive watching anything, movies or television, for the last 2 decades. Or 3 decades even. So this was great. And as I mentioned before, the Conners airs Tuesdays on ABC. And I'm sure you can enjoy John Goodman and whatever he's done. And now you can enjoy me and him talking right now.
Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.
Oh. I was on the lozenges.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
They give me too much nicotine, and I start getting hiccups. And
oh, you get the hiccups?
Yeah.
Some people get that weird thing with the gum, too, the stomach.
Yeah,
or the
I
hiccup.
Do, too. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, I ate them all day long. I would go to sleep with them in my mouth.
Oh, man.
Anyway, and I'd wake up, and it was like the first thing I'd do. I couldn't, like, I just, it was so, it was just so good.
Yeah. I get to the point where I'm shaking.
When you don't have them?
No, when I do.
Oh, when you do it? I don't know.
No, I don't know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. I don't know what, I never got involved with the vape thing because it was too much like the cigarettes.
Yeah.
And I haven't smoked a cigarette for over a decade, but I got on those lozenges.
Yeah.
And then I'd smoke, what happened is I'd get off them altogether, then I'd smoke one cigar. And then, like, you know, then two cigars. And then, you know, I'm eating cigars. You know, yeah. And then I got to get on the nicotine.
I inhale them.
The cigars? Yeah, you can't help it. You can't. I mean, I just can't. But I've been off them for 2 months, and I can't. And now I'm off everything. I've been sober for, like, 20 years. And now, not great.
It beats the alternative, man.
That's for sure.
I got 12 years myself.
Yeah. It's good, right?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
It's getting better, too.
Right, it does. It's like when you finally get that clarity and you're feeling, you know, relatively comfortable in your own skin. I mean, the worst thing about it is that, you know, that's it. That's all there is.
Yeah.
that's the hardest thing to accept.
But I didn't know that for 30 years.
Right, right, right.
And it took me a long time to just, okay, this is all right.
Yeah.
And when I look around, it's better than all right. It's pretty good.
It's good. The gratitude element is always the missing factor when you're hard on yourself, you know, because I'm just sort of like, fuck it. You know, what the fuck? What's the fucking point? I'm an asshole. And then, you know, if you're able to manage it, which I'm not great at, you know, it's okay.
Well, I figure nobody owes me a thing.
Right.
So take care of yourself.
Right. Nobody owes you anything. But that doesn't mean there's not a world full of assholes out there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And mostly you have to laugh at them.
Yeah. Well, that's the best way to do it.
Yeah.
You know, as opposed to sort of, my thing is I get into a thing where like, that guy's an asshole. Why am I not more like him?
Yeah. He's successful.
Yeah, exactly. why am I medium level successful asshole?
Why do I try so much?
Well, that's the thing. And then I pretend like I'm not trying. I don't think, but don't you find that as you get older, you give less of a fuck?
Yeah, oh yeah, that's a big part of it.
Natural, right?
Yeah.
It just happens.
When I'm fine with, I don't have to please everybody, which is like a big deal with me.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Well, when did you learn that one?
Just listen.
Yeah?
Yeah.
When did you learn that one?
I didn't. I'm still doing it. Yeah.
Not pleasing people?
Yeah, but at least I know when I'm doing it.
Yeah.
It was usually I can please people without trying so fucking hard at it.
Well, right, when you're not sitting there assuming you know what they're thinking.
Yeah.
That's a weird key to the whole thing is realizing like I'm making up most of what other people are thinking about me or about this
projecting
situation.
Your shit on them and what do they need? I'll provide that.
Yeah, and then you just end up exhausted and drained and you can't fix people and
I'm in New York, I start talking with a New York accent.
Oh, I'll do that too.
Yeah, and or England.
Yeah, do you do English too?
No. Yeah, but it, yeah, but it sounds exactly like what it is.
What is that about?
A dick with ears.
What? I don't know. I do that too. Like you can hear it on the podcast. Like if I get somebody in here who's New York or Jewish, like Mel Brooks was on the show.
Oh,
I
talk, Jesus.
Within minutes, I'm like, are you kidding me? Of course I think.
No.
Nope. I'm from Brooklyn, 1940. You know, like what is that?
And keep me out of Texas. Hey, how you doing? I just go to it.
I don't, but it happens naturally, right?
Yeah.
I can't figure out what that is, what part of my brain does that, because I do that too. But you think it's sort of a
people pleaser.
You do?
I want to be one of you.
Right. But is that pleasing them, or is it just sort of like, I'm done with me? You seem to have a good handle on yourself. My brain says that I should be more
it's
like
just,
that.
It's just like surrendering everything I am to what they want.
Or just want to be like
that. Can
them.
I fix that truck for you?
I know nothing about
trucks. Yeah. Yeah. Let me pop the hood.
I don't know what's under there.
I haven't done this for years.
Where'd you grow up?
In St. Louis.
Is there a Missouri accent?
I'm sure there is. Yeah, I went to school in Springfield, Missouri, and that's a little bit closer to
Ozarks. I was just in St. Louis. Missouri's like a slightly frightening state to me.
So yeah.
A little bit conservative for my taste.
Yeah, a lot conservative.
Yeah, I would say so. But I did shows in St. Louis, and what's surprising is that, you know, there's terrified progressive people everywhere. And sure. They'll come out.
Hey,
and,
I am.
yeah, right.
Yeah, I got to go there Thursday.
You do?
Yeah, I'm doing something at Washington University, a Q&A or something.
And that's in St. Louis?
Yeah.
And what you don't know what it is?
It's supposed to be a lecture.
Yeah.
Thing, but I have absolutely nothing to give or add to anybody. And so can they just ask
moderator.
Me stuff?
Yeah, I'll do it. Just give me a moderator and a chair.
Somebody I can hear.
Yeah. So they just want you to, you didn't go to school there?
No, that was like the Harvard of St. Louis. I mean, it's a real great school.
And what's what is the umbrella of the lecture series? Is there an acting thing? You don't know.
They wanted a famous guy from St. Louis, I guess. They couldn't get Kevin Klein.
That was it? Short list?
Yeah.
So when you were, you grew up there, you got brothers and sisters?
I got one brother, 14 years older.
Wow.
And a sister that's almost 2 years younger. Yeah, apparently my mom had a partial hysterectomy, and I was a major surprise because my brother was born in 1938.
Yeah.
And then there was World War II and it came back, and I came along in 52, which it shocked everybody.
So that's a real baby boomer.
Yeah.
And your brother was already there 14 years.
Yeah.
Wow. So is he still around?
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. He's in St. Louis.
And so was your dad in the military?
Yeah.
Oh, he went?
Yeah. I don't know much about it. Because he died a month before my second birthday.
Wow.
And before my sister was born.
So, right before?
He died in May. She was born in November.
Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah.
That's that's terrible. But I guess on some level, you have no memory of him.
No, yeah. None at all.
And so you dealt with that sort of that absence thing the whole time, huh?
Yeah, yeah. My brother came back. He had to leave, just get out.
Mm-hmm.
And he came back, and he was like a stranger and trying to do the right thing with me.
Right.
And I just kind of cocooned.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You just clammed.
I just lived in my room in the basement and really nerded out.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
And your brother was trying to sort of step in a little bit?
Yeah.
Yeah. Where did he go off to?
I don't know. He went away, then he wound up in Detroit for a long time.
When the old man passed, he was like, I got to get out.
I was 14 years old, though, so he finished school.
Right, so it was devastating.
A year early,
yeah.
Went away to college for a little while, then took off.
Did he do the hippie thing, or no?
No.
Yeah. It was a little early for
more
that.
Aligned with Beats.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he dug Bop.
Bop,
so, yeah,
right.
A lot of my happiest memories, he turned what we call the hi-fi.
Yeah.
Cranked it up with Charlie Parker and shit like that. So, I really liked it.
So, yeah, of course, right? You either got a brain for that or you don't. It's sort of like...
I guess so.
It's sort of like drugs. You know?
It
kind of connected.
I'm in the mood for drugs.
Yeah, but like, you know, some people listen to jazz and they're like, I can't, turn it off. Especially bop, you know?
I mean, just immediately get that heroin slouch going.
Yeah, me too. Like, it's like a Ritalin effect,
yeah,
right?
Man, yeah, yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah. Let's do it. Like, that was that the character you did in Lewin, Inside Lewin.
Oh,
Gate.
Yeah, yeah.
That guy was great.
Yeah, that was all on the page.
It was there?
Yeah.
But you could tap into it if you were a jazz fan.
Yeah.
You're like, I know this guy.
They did. The thing was, after we were done... First, Ethan said, was he gay?
Yeah.
I said, I don't know. He was certainly leaning. He'll do until one comes along.
Yeah, right,
and,
right.
And we didn't know what instrument he played. I swore he was a piano player. Joel thought he played saxophone.
No one knew?
And Ethan thought he was a trumpet player. Yeah.
But they just left that open.
Yeah.
So on the page, it was just a jazz musician, drug problem.
Yeah.
Yeah, that guy was great. It was sort of Burroughs-y, too, a little bit.
Yeah.
Like it felt a little William Burroughs kind of vibe.
It's all locked in.
Yeah, it's all there. It's stored.
Yeah.
You know, I can access all that. So at least you had that. I guess your older brother was, like, groovy.
Yeah.
And he turned you onto some shit.
Yeah, you know, and comedy.
Yeah?
Yeah, he was, it made me happy to see him laugh, so I kind of dig the same things he did. We go out to the car to listen to Bob and Ray on on the radio. Yeah. Ernie Kovacs.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. On TV?
Sid Caesar. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. Our show of shows, yeah. That crazy stuff.
Yeah.
They were funny, right?
Yeah, they were legitimately funny.
Because, like, I'm 56, so my memories are mostly repeats of that era, but I guess you caught a bit of it,
I caught
right?
the end of it. Yeah. Ernie Kovacs, I like, he had a gig on ABC, and I definitely remember that, because it was surreal.
Trippy,
and
right?
For some reason, I always dug that.
So you guys...
Not quite connected.
Yeah, yeah. You got some laughs together?
Yeah.
Do you still? I mean, do you guys
Yeah,
still?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's wild.
Yeah.
I can't... So there you are in Missouri. Like, what's your mom doing to keep things afloat?
She'd do laundry for other people, babysit kids, worked at a drugstore, worked at a rib joint.
So you got ribs coming?
Yeah, I could steal her tips.
good barbecue coming into the house,
yeah,
at least.
Yeah,
yeah.
And, yeah, I was like a latchkey kid.
You and your sister?
Yeah, when we were, like, a lot younger, we'd call her store, her drugstore, all the time.
Right.
And it pissed the owners off.
Because just...
I just had to talk to mom, that's all.
She all right?
Yeah.
Yeah. She kept you afloat, huh?
Yeah, yeah. The house was paid for, I guess, on GI Bill.
Uh-huh.
And... She got a Social Security, and I had to scramble to do because she didn't have an education.
And how long did she stay around for?
2000.
Yeah?
Yeah. She had colon cancer.
That's tough.
Yeah.
Sorry, man. So when did you get to, how did you evolve into knowing you wanted to be in front of people? I mean, I know you played football or whatever that was.
Not really well. our high school team won one game in 4 years.
Well, what position? I know nothing about football.
Offensive guard and defensive tackle.
Is that just because you were big and in the Midwest?
Yeah,
you just had
that
to
was
do-
it. I had a cousin that played for Missouri University.
Yeah,
and so he was like a hero. So I'm gonna play football too. Organized baseball we couldn't afford, so I just didn't do it. We'd play sandlot ball.
Oh, like in terms of Little League or
yeah,
stuff?
You mean
you had to buy the uniform
and pay into the organization.
Did you like that better, baseball?
I don't know.
Oh.
I mean, just from sandlot games, yeah, but I really liked football.
But it's weird because, like, culturally, I mean, you said you were down in the basement nerding out. What were you nerding out with?
Comic books.
Oh, really?
What
were your comics?
Radio. Oh, it was... DC originally.
Yeah, right.
And I would get actual subscriptions to them.
Oh, yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah.
So they were coming in.
Like the Atom.
Yeah.
Green Lantern.
Yeah.
And then somebody turned me on to Marvel.
Oh, and when, yeah.
And this is an inferior product, but then I kind of got into it because everything was linked up in Marvel.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So you had to, but that kept
still
up for
is,
a long time.
Oddly.
But my brother.
Yeah.
Bought the very first copy of Mad Magazine in 1952.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That was it. That was it for me because I dug, if I could shoplift the paperbacks, the compilations of the real stuff with Will Elder.
Yeah, yeah.
And Harvey Kurtzman and all those great artists. And for some reason, I saw something one time. It made me laugh until I was crying.
Yeah.
Yeah, just that, man. And then
Mad Magazine was great. So you got it when it was in a comic form, or what?
No, I didn't. But I got the compilations it was a comic
in the
form.
Paperback books.
For me, it was I'd get the magazine.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because I didn't know about the comic book stuff.
So you made the jump. So that's sort of like that. That's the evolution. That's a nice evolution because if you stay in the DC Marvel world, you might remain a nerd.
Yeah.
Whereas you get a little Mad Magazine.
You get nerdier.
Yeah.
You get you have little friends that you do the little in jokes with.
With the Mad Magazine.
Yeah.
But also it's sophisticated in the sense of it was cultural satire.
I'm
right?
smarter than you.
A little bit, right? Because I thought Mad Magazine was like it was some sort of window into the grown up world.
What it was a window into Judaism.
Yeah.
In an odd way, because if I didn't know what something meant, I'd look it up because I wanted to laugh more than anything. And
so like Al Jaffe and all those guys were all Jewish and they didn't use Yiddish words and stuff.
Yeah. Harvey Kurtzman.
Dave Berg.
Dave Berg.
Was that his name?
The lighter side of.
Yeah.
And I stuck with that until it kind of wasn't funny anymore. Which is about the same time I got out of the Boy Scouts.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Did you go to National Lampoon at all?
Yeah. Big time.
That's the next thing I remember.
It was. There was a gap there because that didn't happen until I graduated high school.
The Lampoon?
Yeah. And then they cleaned up their act and got really good in 71.
Right. Right.
They started doing the clean edge parodies with the actual advertising photographs.
Yeah. Right, right. And, remember the yearbook parody?
Yeah.
I have a copy of that. That was
the yearbook
great.
And the Sunday newspaper.
Yeah.
It was all around Dacron, Ohio.
Right. It was so funny. That was mind-blowing to me.
Yeah, it was Doug Kenny and P.J. O'Rourke.
Yeah.
Going back to their high school days.
Yep. Did you know those guys?
No, I never did. Doug Kenny died. I probably would have gotten to meet him.
Yeah, I met P.J. He's still around. He's funny, but he's gotten, I think, politically dubious.
Yeah.
So you're coming into football with that kind of disposition. Was it not as jockey back then? Were jocks not as
They were the jockier jocks were jockiest.
Yeah,
a lot of them were bullies.
And did you? But you were.
I wanted to fit in so fucking bad. I never really bullied anybody because I was on that end of the stick for years.
For what?
Little fat boy.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and. You have to watch your turf because you go on the wrong turf, the Catholic boys will beat you up.
Yeah?
Yeah.
When you were
little. And I would take beatings instead of trying to fight back.
When they beat you up for being a fat kid?
No, because I was walking in their air.
Oh, the Catholic kids.
Yeah.
There was a Catholic neighborhood?
Around the Catholic school.
Oh, really?
But, yeah, where they congregated around the school and... And I was friends with most of them.
How'd you grow up, religion wise?
Southern Baptist.
Oh, really?
Yes, sir.
So the Gemstones wasn't too big of a.
No, I have really good memories.
Yeah.
Of not good things, but good memories of sitting in church when I was a kid, and the guy never lowered his voice.
Yeah, never lowered.
All,
his voice.
All yelling and going to a tent revival.
All yelling.
Yeah.
Did it say that on the sign?
All yelling all the time.
Yeah. We Jesus, all yelling all the time.
Our loud Lord. We're louder than you.
Yeah. But you remember that, huh?
Yeah.
Was it an exciting thing?
What it was I was easily led. Hmm. So when I was younger, I remember grabbing, they have a thing where they call you down to get your soul saved.
Yeah.
And I was maybe 9 or even younger, and grabbing my sister and shoving her up so she could get her soul saved. She's screaming and
your little sister.
And fighting me. Yeah. And I'm, oh, you got to go. You got to go.
But not you.
Yeah. No. Yeah. I'd already been saved.
Yeah. Well, that's a curious thing. Like, you know, that whole kind of like people pleasing and, you know, wanting to be, you know, part of something. Because I felt that too. Like there... Do you think, like, you know, not, you know, having your old man around was sort of left a piece missing kind of thing?
I'm sure it did.
Yeah.
But I didn't know it.
Right.
I never, ever missed him because I didn't know him.
Right. Well, because my dad was absent a lot and sort of a self-involved person. But I know growing up, I always would gravitate towards charismatic, you know, seemingly grounded dudes who were older than me that I thought could teach me something.
Yeah, me too.
Right?
My acting teacher in college was one of them. I considered him a father figure.
Yeah.
And leaders in the Boy Scouts would help me out. But I was rudderless and had no discipline. So
how
I
was
a terrible student. I loved it.
Did it get you disciplined? Or like was it, I guess?
It did to a certain effect because I loved it. Yeah. I really liked it, going out into the woods and shit like that.
Yeah.
And learning to smoke.
Yeah,
that's looking at Playboys.
Yeah, is that where you first smoked, Boy Scouts?
No, I smoked in a sewer tunnel when I was 9.
Yeah,
Winston's.
Yeah, with just on your
Marlboro, own? Marlboros, and you light the cigarette and you have to inhale it and say your name and then exhale it, and that was a real smoke.
Who taught you that? Some
Ollie
older kid,
Ollie Cromwell.
How old? How much older?
He was same age.
Same.
Yeah.
But he must have got it from his brother or something.
Yeah, something. I don't know. I don't care.
Isn't that funny, though, with that stuff? It's like, you know, you feel shitty, it tastes weird, but like, you know, you're like, I'm going to get the hang of this. You know, I'm a little nauseous, but I'm going to get the hang of this.
It was the next stage of development.
Yeah.
You know, like, I had to wait to shave for a long time, but it was not unlike that.
Yeah.
I
loved it, man.
And plus it was bad.
Yeah, very bad. But they were so available, though. It was bad, but like,
oh,
they
shit,
were,
man. It worked.
They were like 50 cents a pack back then.
It's like a quarter a pack for Camels.
Yeah.
That and gas, the two bad things were so cheap.
Yeah, and they were, you'd get them at the same place. I remember the Husky Station in Albuquerque, New Mexico. It was like 55 cents for a pack of cigarettes, and the gallon of gas was like around the same.
Yeah.
Oh, oof, talking about cigarettes. Love them.
Yeah, I got this here vape thing.
I know you do. So, all right, so the Boy Scouts helped you out, and then...
Yeah, I really did, and because I liked it. Yeah. I guess it was not necessarily discipline, but an organized thing, because I was basically alone, and there were a lot of other kids doing the same thing, and you know, I hung on to it till I was ninth grade, which is a little too long.
Did you go to Eagle?
No, I got as far as Star Scout.
Oh, I don't know what that is.
Yeah, it's two below Eagle.
Oh.
But I wouldn't have made it.
What were Weebelows?
Weebelows was an organization where it was, I don't think it was like the SS or anything.
Yeah, the security operation.
Yeah, my brother was a Weeblo.
A Weeblo?
You stand in line at summer camp. You stand in the big circle, and an Indian runs around you, or a kid dressed like a Native American.
Yeah.
And they, what they call, tap you out. They thump you on the chest, and then you're a Weeblo.
Oh, so it was a ritual thing.
Yeah.
It was the Illuminati of the...
Yes, the Bavarian
Illuminati. Of the Boy Scout operation. That was their wing. So when do you do the... So the football thing, you just did it. You didn't think you were good at it.
No, I knew I wasn't good at it. I was just slow.
Yeah.
And we were all white.
Yeah.
We didn't know any better.
Yeah.
But I was slow, but I loved to hit. Yeah. And I was disorganized. I just wouldn't learn plays. Uh-huh. I just liked to be part of a team.
Right.
And I liked to hit.
But not a leader, per se.
No.
no leading.
No, I just liked being part of a team.
So when did you first start getting into acting?
I was in seventh grade. I was tapped. We had this acting teacher. She was a knockout. She was doing community theater in St. Louis. She was in the union.
Yeah.
So to please her, I
did whatever
she picked
you
me to be a part of a play called You Can't Take It With You, Kaufman and Hart.
I was in that.
I was Grandpa Vanderhoof.
Oh, it was this chaos, right?
Yeah. It's a well-timed farce, not the way a seventh grader would do it, eighth grader.
With the bomb making or uncle downstairs or whatever,
So we only did one night of it, and I forgot my lines. And I sat at a long table, and I got up and started improvising.
Yeah.
Because I just didn't, I would not flop. That just would not enter my brain. I will not fail at this.
Yeah.
And silence was deadly.
Yeah.
So I don't know how I did it, but I got up and started improvising until I got around the table. The lines came back, and I just got into it. And my teacher, when it was over, gave me the biggest, nicest hug.
And that was enough.
And then in high school, I got into a couple of plays.
Yeah. While you were playing ball?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was no big deal.
Yeah. What were the plays? You remember?
Lil Abner.
Oh yeah.
And the next year, Hello Dolly. When I was a senior.
So did you find something up there on stage that you know was filling the void?
I guess so, because I wasn't cutting into football, and it turned out I was good at it.
Yeah.
And I knew I was good at it, and I went away to a junior college. I didn't go away, but I went to a junior college, got involved there, and then I transferred to another college and just lost a year of my life fucking around a fraternity and
and that wanting to belong thing again.
That was it.
Is that where the drinking got going?
No, not really, because I would drink like everybody else.
Right.
I think I could still drink like everybody else.
Yeah
The drinking happened. I was going with a girl and she dumped me, and it's the first time I'd been out of a relationship in maybe 4 years.
Yeah.
Didn't know what to do with myself, but I was starting to make dough.
This was in New York?
This is like 1978.
Oh, years later.
Yeah. And Animal House had just come out. So
right.
I remember that. That was fun. So I go out every night and sit at an actor's bar.
Yeah.
Just looking to see who walked in and shit like that. Talk to the bartenders, they're all actors.
Right.
And it got to be every night. And I started to gain a lot of weight.
Yeah.
And then I went to another bar, Cafe Central.
Yeah.
On the Upper West Side. And there was a lot of actors in there. And
so it was a community thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it got to be, you know, I could have gotten my mail there. I was there every night during the day.
And, you know, it's that's how it gets tricky, because you're like, that's my friends are up there. You know, I got friends. I started drinking heavy after a girl broke my heart. And I consciously decided, like, that I'm going to be this guy now. It wasn't like it didn't ease in.
Yeah.
It was just sort of like, this is my life. Fuck her. Fuck them. I'm living this way.
Yeah. Even when I was drinking with the fraternity, it was just empty. And I choose to go away by myself.
Yeah.
But be near all these people. And I guess I never did know how to drink normally.
Yeah.
I just had to have more.
Well, the good thing about that is that, like, and you're probably the same as me, I never think that I can. I really don't ever think that I can drink normally.
Yeah.
If I ever think about drinking, it's like who the fuck wants to even drink one beer?
Yeah, it can't happen.
Yeah, and why would you want
to? It's like jumping off a building and flying.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen.
It's not going to happen.
You know, one beer goes to two beers, goes to Jack Daniels, goes to who's got blow.
Who's got blow? Yeah, that was always the thing. It's like, I got to stay up more for this.
And it was, this needs my full attention. But the most fun part was tracking it down, which could take hours, but you had to have it.
Yeah.
That was more fun than actually doing it.
I know. Once you got it, that the rush of getting it was actually, for sure.
And there was something about opening the
bindle.
The bindle and looking inside, it being whole and pure. And the ritual of chopping it up.
Oh, my God.
Putting it on a key.
Oh, the key. Yeah, I used the key.
My nose is starting to run.
Yeah, a little bit. Or the pen top. Did you ever use the pen top?
All the time,
In the cigarettes, right? You put the bindle in the cigarettes with...
Yeah.
Same system.
My nose is starting to run.
Yeah, me too. I'm getting drips.
When I'd start talking about blow, my nose would run.
Yeah, oh, for sure. But that was the thing, like, that you're sitting there. Do you remember that you're sitting there at a bar at 2 a.m, it's empty, and, you know, you're on blow, and you're just sort of like, things are going to turn around.
Yeah.
Somebody's
going to walk in.
Yeah, it's going to happen.
The girl of my dreams will walk in now.
Right now. And what would happen if she did? I'd be too jacked to do anything.
Yeah.
Hope she's got a lot of energy to talk.
Talk her pants off.
Yeah, sitting around strangers talking about shit. That was the worst. That's the worst part of people pleasing, is when you're at a stranger's house doing their blow, listening to them.
Oh, shit.
And all you're thinking about is like, oh, it's more coming. We're going to put some more lines.
Yeah, you dump some out there.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you mind if I get a little bit?
Do you mind? Yeah. Can I just, is that anyone doing that one? Is that, who's is that?
You mind?
Yeah.
Whoops. Oh, was that yours?
Oh, God damn it. Are we out? So, like, when you went, like, going to New York, though, that was a big jump.
Yeah, that was a big deal for me.
Yeah.
I graduated. I didn't decide. I did summer theater in Springfield, Missouri. And at the end of that, I said, well, I'm going to try this professionally.
And you didn't know anybody?
I thought I was pretty good. No.
Yeah.
I knew a guy that did costumes in New York.
Yeah.
And he agreed to let me land on him for a while.
Right.
So I took the Amtrak up to Penn Station. Overtipped the cab driver and landed on 92nd Street.
Yeah.
And stayed with this guy, and I was terrified.
It was
absolutely
overwhelming.
Terrified.
You'd never been there before?
No.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
It's massive.
I had a friend there
who'd
been there for a year.
Yeah.
And he knew the ropes. He knew about auditions, which was important because he forced me to go to auditions.
But just like casting call stuff? Or like you didn't have an agent or anything?
No,
you're just
get
going?
It in a newspaper.
Oh, right.
Backstage.
Right, backstage,
And they tell you where to go, who's looking for what. And then it was all non-equity auditions.
Right. And so you just started doing that? Calling out cold?
Yeah. And I got a job on the third or fourth try.
In stage or on camera?
No, nothing on camera for a long time. This was at a dinner theater in Springboro, Ohio, doing 1776.
And how long did you have to do that?
That was years, but that was only lasted till after Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Then I couldn't, my girlfriend went down and got a job at the same dinner theater, so I went down and waited tables.
Followed her?
Yeah, but I made more money than anybody.
Yeah.
Cutting their lawns, doing odd jobs,
And this was in Ohio?
Yeah, waiting tables.
So you just went from New York to Ohio?
Yeah.
Doing whatever was necessary.
Yeah, and I was more comfortable there because it was suburbs.
Right, Midwest-y a bit.
People could drive around.
Yeah, yeah. That's the other thing about growing up in a suburb or growing up in the Midwest is like the car thing. Like New York, it's like no one's got a fucking car.
No, you don't need one.
Yeah, it's just people everywhere.
Yeah.
You can't get away.
Good. I still take the train.
Me too. Yeah, I mean, it's nice to have been in New York so you know how to be in New York.
Yeah.
I don't want to live there again.
Yeah, I don't either. I mean, I dig it when I'm up there doing a play.
Yeah.
But after a while, I guess I'm just too used to space.
Sure. But do you have a place here still?
Yeah.
And you mostly?
Yeah, we started looking after I got sober.
Yeah.
Because I got sober in Malibu.
Yeah. Oh, nice.
And, one of the sober mills.
Yeah.
The sober industry.
Yeah. Well, if it works, it works, right?
Yeah, and found a place out on the west side here, and we got one. I thought maybe it'd help me work more out here, which I enjoyed.
Yeah.
That never happened.
No?
No.
Because mostly in New Orleans?
Yeah, I moved down there because my wife is from Bogalusa, Louisiana, and I thought, well, I'm going to be on the road a lot so she could be near her parents.
Right. And that worked out?
Yeah. Worked out great.
So when did you start, it's weird because I think the first time I remember, I know you did some stage work, but I mean, the first time I remember seeing you in movies was that David Byrne movie.
Yeah, that's like the first, I was doing a Broadway show then and went to an audition for David and then I got it.
Was it The Bear?
The Dancing Bear.
The Bear? Like you were this guy, big, nice, warm guy?
Yeah, my brain's jammed. I can't think of the character's name.
Yeah.
But it was great because it was David. And it was the only movie he ever directed.
Right.
And I just kind of hung with him on the set looking at stuff, and I really, really liked it. It wasn't the first movie I ever did, but maybe it was the first lead I'd ever gotten.
Yeah, I guess that's why I remember it. And David was sort of, I just remember being in that zone of like that kind of art, music, and what he was up to and the vision of it. And his wife was involved, I think, with the costumes.
Bonnie.
Yeah. And I just, I remember it was like going to like an art show for me. To go see True Stories. I was like, what is this about? And it had all the Burnisms in it.
Yeah.
Did you like working with that guy?
I loved him.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's just so whip smart.
An intense guy, huh?
Yeah, but in a good way.
Oh, yeah, I guess he had done a couple movies, Revenge of the Nerds and Chud.
Chud. you remember Jay Thomas?
I do, the TV actor?
Yeah, and Radio Man.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it was Jay and I and one scene.
Underground Dweller, cannibalistic?
Cannibalistic Humanoid Underground Dwellers.
Yeah.
But a lot of my friends from the bar were in it, so, so I fit right in.
Yeah. So you knew everybody.
Yeah.
It was cast out of New York?
Yeah.
So when did it start to really sort of take, most of the stuff you did in New York was stage stuff?
Yeah, mostly out of town or children's theater around New York.
So you did that whole regional theater, what you were talking about before, dinner theater, taking the gig. Did you see that as being, was that enough for you at the time?
Because I started doing commercials in 78.
Yeah.
Then I hated myself for doing them, which is really stupid. But I kept getting booked. Because I didn't care about getting them, I kept getting booked.
Why'd you hate yourself?
Oh, but I had some idealized version. It's
the sellout.
Am I an alcoholic? Yeah,
right.
It's just, there's always some idealized version,
right,
of what I should be doing, and all my friends at the bar were doing films or really good theater.
Yeah. Right. So you're comparing, despair,
and driving my. Yeah, I'm driving myself down because I'm probably making more dough than they are.
Right.
But that's when I started getting trouble. Is when I was making money and.
And you didn't feel good about what you were doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Of course. I still battle with, because I got it, tomorrow I got to tape a special. I'm taping a comedy special tomorrow. And if there's some part, even though I'm sober-minded and I've been good, I feel great about a lot of things, there's some part of me that wants to fuck it up.
How can I fuck this up? And do it.
Yeah, yeah. I feel him. It's like this. He's looking for like the theater's not going to be that good. You know, like what the fuck? Shut up. I don't know if that second joke's going to work. But I've been doing it. You know, it's just the worst. Just keeping that guy shut up.
Yeah.
Fuck him. So all right. So but after the commercials, and were you training at all? I mean, did you?
No, I went up there to go to a school. And I went there and just, like, college was better.
Yeah.
And the people at college were better. And I got discouraged. And then I got that job, dinner theater job, and I left. And I just chucked it. And I wish to fuck I had gone to a proper school.
Really?
Or stuck
still,
around. Yeah.
Still?
Yeah. Because it would have given me some solid foundation, more than I had from college.
Yeah.
Now not so much anymore because you learn by doing it.
You do,
that's
right?
How you learn, yeah. But I always wanted some more technique to fall back on. But yeah. I'm all right, yeah. And that's because I don't trust myself with what I'm doing.
Right.
That I'm looking for that technique. And I'm just now starting to learn that what I've been doing is okay.
Yeah.
You're fine. Just leave it alone. Don't nitpick every fucking thing.
Right.
And trust your instinct.
Yeah.
When you're there, that's something I never did, was trust myself.
So every, up to a certain point, up until fairly recently, you're saying you do things and be like, ah, fuck.
Yeah, I'm just learning now to trust myself.
Wow.
Yeah.
So it's been a lifetime of beating the shit out of yourself.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Well, it's so weird because, like, the more actors I talk to, the more I realize that, you're going to figure it out however you're going to figure it out. There's no magic way.
And it's... It makes it so much easier when you're not flogging yourself.
Yeah.
And it was just learned behavior. I've always done it.
Yeah. Fat kid behavior?
There's some progress. Well, that's when alcoholism started.
Yes.
Yeah. Fat kid.
Yeah.
I was alone in the house and I'd eat, play games with food.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that's when it started.
Yeah.
But.
Comforting.
Just trust myself.
Yeah. I mean, it's like. That's what, like, sort of what I'm talking about too. Like, I'm feeling that right now. Like, there's no reason I shouldn't, but it's one of those cognitive battles, right? Like,
yeah,
that you actually have to go, like, you know how to do.
Well, this. My whole lick about doing this today was I got nothing to talk about, man. I'm nothing. I don't bring anything to the fucking party. Why do they want me? I didn't do anything. But I'm having a great time. So.
Why did they want me? I didn't do anything.
Yeah. Why am I being punished?
It's like
I got nothing to say.
When we talked about the beginning, the thing you got to go do at Washington University is like, just wanted someone from St. Louis, I guess.
Yeah.
So like right after True Stories, the Big Easy I talked to Dennis.
Yeah.
Did you play a cop in that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dennis was the head cop. I got that. I got three movies in a row in 85. Then I started doing films.
Yeah.
Big Easy, which took me back to New Orleans, which I would go to just to get lost.
Oh, really?
Every time I got a couple nickels together, I'd fly down there.
You love it?
I loved it, yeah. But what I loved was the French Quarter.
Yeah.
And I was a habitué of certain bars, so they knew me. It was like coming home.
Oh, yeah.
But it was all based on... booze and blow.
Yeah. So you had that experience of pre-Katrina New Orleans back at the high point of just when it was, so you got into the dark corners there.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I dug it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the music, man,
yeah.
Go out and get my ears dirty.
Yeah.
And the food.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was mostly alcohol.
Yeah. I never really had a party there. I ended up there once by myself, but I never got the hang of the city. But I do know when you go there, there's no place like it.
Yeah.
Like there's an enchanting sort of element.
I remember one night walking on Bourbon Street.
Yeah.
And I was drunk enough to start acting stranger for blow.
Oh, God. That's the
and
worst.
Some guy drove me out to a project.
Yeah.
But I copped and I came back alive and I told people that story and I said, you're still here.
Yeah, yeah. But that's the worst. That's the worst where you're like at a bar and you don't know the town. I did that once where some guy at the end of the bar, I think he had a cold. Like he was literally like,
he had a genuine cold.
Yeah, I was sort of like, what's up? What you got?
Yeah, it's like people are waiting to give their blow away.
Or that they have it.
Yeah,
it's like ridiculous. Like, you know, that guy looks like he's the kind of guy that would, that's so embarrassing. But Quaid is like, you know, as you're starting to, you know, do these movies with these actors, he'd been around a bit. Are you just learning from them too? I mean, do you get to,
not necessarily from them, but just by the process itself and watching other people that I admire do it and listening to directors, stuff like that. And then I got to work with Al Pacino a couple of years later.
On Sea of Love?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And that was, you know, he was my hero when I started seeing him.
Sure.
And, he was just a great guy.
Really? Thank God.
Yeah.
Isn't that nice when that works out?
Yeah. But he loved acting.
Yeah.
And the process of it, everything to do with it. So we talk about that.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
So there was that practical advice there.
Yeah. Yeah. Just listen to his stories. And he was so kind to me.
Yeah. Well, that's great.
And watching him working with him.
That's great.
And I'm, you know, pinching myself every time I'm doing it.
Right. Yeah, well, it's so nice when the people you revere turn out to be good people.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's nothing worse than the sort of, like, the hero worship, and then, like, these are fucking assholes.
That's what I'm always afraid of, you know.
That guy?
You don't meet your heroes.
Well, no, I try not to, but then I interview them, and they're usually, the one thing I've learned from talking to so many people is that everyone's just a person. So, like, you know, once you get them into the right perspective, which is human, they're not assholes.
Yeah.
Maybe it's your expectations.
Yeah, definitely, whatever you're projecting on.
Sure. So, but when the relationship with the Coens start with Raising Arizona, right, that's right around that time.
That's right. Yeah, that was the third film I did in 85, 86.
So that's their second movie, I think.
Yeah.
And now, when you enter that world with those guys at that age, were you aware that, like, this is something amazing?
I knew it was something special because it was all on the page. And their sense of humor was not unlike mine.
Uh-huh.
I mean, they're a lot smarter than I am.
Yeah.
But just hanging around with them was wonderful. Yeah, it was always laughs.
And the stories were like, when you read like the script of Raising Arizona, you were like, it's like, this is amazing.
Yeah, I just fell in love with it. And then I went in and met with them. I didn't do much reading, but we hung out for about an hour,
uh-huh.
a lot longer than I should have.
Right.
And we were goofing on resume pictures and we just hung.
Yeah. And that part was so great. You and Bill Forsyth. Bill Forsyth. I haven't seen him in a while. But the whole thing was so amazing. I watch it like once a year or so, their movies.
It was so much fun.
When you come out of the ground.
I wanted to do more.
You know,
just how can I make this better for these guys?
And when you do those movies, because I know when I was thinking about the Coen stuff that you've done, they're all like comedic, but none of them are, you don't play them as funny, really.
No.
Yeah, but they're all insanely hilarious.
Yeah, the straighter you are, the
better,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
and Nicolas Cage at that point was so wiry and so goddamn sharp. That must have been fun.
He was. I found out later he based his character on Woody Woodpecker.
I thought it was Wile E. Coyote.
It might be.
Well, the Woody Woodpecker was a tattoo on the
that
biker.
Was the a car decal.
Right, right,
for
right.
Motorheads.
Yeah.
Wood Systems.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, is that what that was?
Yeah,
oh.
With a bent.
Yeah,
Ben Pecker.
Right. Yeah. I knew it was a cartoon character. That's fucking hilarious. Now you were in the movie Punchline, which was a ridiculous movie.
Yeah, at the time it didn't feel ridiculous because you know I was hanging out at the Improv every night then.
Yeah, like as a comic, you know, when I saw it, we were like, oh yeah, the locker room, the old comic locker room.
Yeah, I had a different perspective.
No, but you were in the Improv crew at that time?
Yeah, I never went on, I would rarely go onto the floor to watch guys. I was just hanging out
at that front
bar because it was, Peter Riegert, I go, where can I hang out in L.A.?
Yeah.
So the Improv is most like New York bars. So
that's true. They kind of had a scene there. You know, people would hang around there.
Like, yeah.
You know, guys would show up there at that time. It was a good time. Like that was the 80s. All the comics were around. Were you friends with comics?
Yeah, I was. I used to see Sam Kinison all the time.
Yeah. At the Comedy Store?
Yeah, Rick Dukeman.
So you used to come down to the store too, the Comedy Store?
No, I went there once, but that was it. I just
Just the Improv?
Yeah.
I knew Kennison. We did some time. I did plenty of Blow with Sam Kennison.
Yeah, me too.
And then you had to listen to him and look at him. He's real into like, look at me in the eye. Good. Where are you going, John?
Hey, bathroom.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Those good times. So you work like, what do you do? Like 2-3 movies a year for the last like while? It's been a, you know, quite a run.
I had been, but lately I got the opportunity. Roseanne wanted to do the show again.
Oh, the Connors. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
That came into, that just fell in my lap.
Yeah.
And it was nice not to be living out of a suitcase.
But why were you living out of a suitcase?
Cause no, we're doing films.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you mean going. Yeah.
Being I got a place here.
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
And that's how it was the first time. I was still living in New York, but I was doing films all the time, so I was living out of a suitcase.
And then you got the first
Roseanne. Yeah, we hit it off. Roseanne and I hit it off real well at the audition.
Yeah, that was like 88, 87?
87, I think.
87. That was your life.
Yeah.
Well, she was like, she was something else. She still is something else. But at that time, you know, did you know going into the original Roseanne that this was going to be such a game-changing show for the culture?
At the time, I just didn't care.
Yeah.
I'd go, okay, you know, we'll maybe do 5 of these and then they'll kick us off. But,
right.
You know, I made some nice coin.
Yeah.
And I didn't worry about that.
Right.
I didn't care.
And then it just evolved into this massive thing for a decade almost. And you became that guy.
Yeah, I'm still that guy.
Oh, I know.
Yeah, they don't know my
name. That guy's back.
Or the character, you're that guy.
You're the guy from Roseanne.
Yeah, that's it.
But you know, it's weird because like I watched Roseanne, but like I wasn't, you know, a fanatic Roseanne watcher. So like you stand out in my mind as the guy in the movies more than the guy in Roseanne.
Okay.
Which is fine.
Yeah.
I mean, Barton Fink is one of my favorite movies ever. And yeah, I'll show you A Life of the Mind.
That's one I want to do over again.
Really?
Yeah. Just do it better.
Do it better? You were crazy.
Yeah. It was.
Going down that hallway?
Yeah.
Come on, man. How are you going to do that better? That was fucking great.
Yeah, I did that back to back with a movie called King Ralph with O'Toole.
Uh-huh. Oh, wow.
Which was just the best. Yeah, the movie.
Working with that guy?
The movie stunk, but just being with Peter O'Toole.
And you were still drinking, fortunately.
Yeah, I was. He wasn't.
Oh, damn.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
But he'd take me around to bars and
where'd you
different
shoot
restaurants.
That?
London. First time.
And so you got to hang out a lot with him?
Yeah. Yeah. He was, we'd go out to dinner or places where he had scenes.
Yeah.
And we were sitting at the Savoy Hotel one night. And
yeah.
He was surrounded by pictures of Richard Burton.
Right.
And Harris and all his friends. Just a little wistful.
Yeah, he was. That's that generation, huh?
Yeah.
Did you learn anything from that guy?
Do the scenes as though you're late for a train.
Really?
Yeah.
Urgency.
Yeah.
Get present.
Yeah, that made a lot of sense to me. Take out all the slack.
When you think about all the movies you've done, like outside, like obviously you like working with the Coens. Like they put you in a lot of movies, and the Big Lebowski has like this cult following. I mean, like you know, people.
Yeah.
There's a religion to it.
A frightening little cult.
They are, but they seem okay. Those people.
Yeah.
They're nerds.
Yeah.
They're not bad.
They're
guys.
Fun.
Yeah.
They appreciate it.
But like in doing all this work, do you look back at any of the movies with more fondness than others?
Oh yeah, anything I did. For Joel and Ethan.
Yeah.
The David Byrne film. Yeah, that was a big eye opener. Yeah, working with Al.
Yeah.
Yeah. I worked with him 3 times now.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah, there was a movie he did about Jack Kevorkian.
Oh, that was great. It's an HBO movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, like, it was one of those things where, you know, for me, when I was watching Pacino in that, because, like, he sort of gets a little, you know, he gets stuck in certain habits.
Yeah.
But in that movie, it was like, holy shit. He just turned himself inside out there and became that guy. I didn't see any Pacino-isms.
It was, it was great to watch.
Right.
Great to hang in there with him.
Now, what was the Flintstones experience?
I got roped into it.
Yeah?
I was doing a movie that Spielberg produced.
Yeah.
I did 2 of them. One was Arachnophobia.
Oh, yeah.
Then... a movie called Always that Steven directed.
Yeah.
And while we were at our first table read for Always, he comes in and he sits down and he goes, ladies and gentlemen, I have an announcement to make. I've just found my Fred Flintstone. And I'm looking, you know.
Yeah.
I thought, oh, God, no, not this. Because I knew I was going to hear Yabba Dabba Doo for the rest of my life. And I wasn't really, I liked the Flintstones when I was in fifth grade.
Sure. So you didn't feel like you had a choice?
No. Mm. It was, yeah, do it. I about 6 months before we started filming, I called him. I got drunk and called him up and said, I don't think I can do this.
Yeah.
And I wound up doing it.
What did he say?
Oh, it was loud. But I liked working with him.
With Spielberg?
In Arachnophobia, he'd get in the, I'd be driving a truck, and he'd be, put himself down in the passenger side, not on the seat, but squinched down, and because he thought it'd be funny if he wasn't in the shot.
Who, Spielberg?
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
Was he directing that, or was he a producer?
No,
he
was a producer on it.
And he just liked fucking with you?
Yeah. but it was great being around there. I would go over to Amblin every night after I get off of Roseanne just to hang out.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that made me feel good.
So, because, like, it's you know, you're in it. You're part of it.
Yeah, I felt like I'd gotten somewhere.
So it's interesting that you had that, you were doing the Roseanne show and still going back and doing movies.
Yeah.
And it sort of, that was an amazing time, I would imagine.
Yeah, especially, like, it's King Ralph and Barton Fink.
And like that with Hail Caesar, you know, I think that's a great double feature.
Yeah, yeah, Barton, I think so too.
Like they go together. It's almost like a sequel, right?
Yeah, yeah.
No one talks about Hail Caesar. I fucking love that movie.
I did too. All your communists.
Yeah, they were great.
Yeah.
The communists were great. They were so hilarious. And when you did the Bring Out Your Dead, I love that movie too. You don't hear much about that.
Yeah, I'm ashamed of myself for that one because I was drunk for most of it.
Oh.
I was really intimidated. I didn't really know what I was going to do.
You were intimidated by working with Scorsese? Well,
yeah, who I shouldn't have been. He was the nicest guy in the world. I was just very unhappy then, but I wind up with a bottle and start drinking to make things
during
better.
The day, yeah.
During filming, yeah. And we filmed mostly at night. And I didn't really have a character. I said yes because I wanted to work with Martin Scorsese, and then I didn't do the work.
Hmm. That's a weird feeling. So when you're just showing up as yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With an accent.
Yeah.
That was my character.
It's like, how do you know when you, like, I guess when you know when you've locked into the character if you're not aware of it?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. When things come naturally.
Yeah.
You don't have to work that hard.
Yeah. So you do some animated stuff too. And I read that, that when you and Billy Crystal did the Cars, Monsters,
no,
Inc.
Monsters, Inc.
That you, like, because I'm involved with the animated thing now, but you guys did a lot of it together.
Yeah, that was Billy's choice, and it was so much better when we got together. The energy just met and zoomed. It was so much better when we worked together.
Yeah.
And I just hang on to Billy because he could improvise.
Sure,
and
right.
He sure did.
Yeah, and you can feel the vibe.
Yep,
and
yep.
It made the movie better.
Yeah, it sure did. And but the energy, we do them separately.
Yeah,
and then Billy came up with this idea, and then it really started working. Really cooked.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's fun, right? Are you able to identify fun?
Yeah, I have a. Yeah, I know it when I'm in it.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah,
because I'm not. You know, that has taken me a while to figure out.
Oh yeah, a long time, but. If I'm having it, I don't want to stop. And my favorite thing is laughing. And if I do that, then I'm in a good place.
Yeah. And you've got to find people to make you laugh.
Yeah.
So what is it, like, coming back to the Connors, how it's pretty easy in the sense of, like, do you find that guy's right there?
Yeah, he was. I was worried about it because I can be worried.
Yeah.
Because I like being worried.
Like, how am I going to find him again?
We walked onto the set, and it was... I hate using the word surreal.
Yeah.
It's just overused, but that's what it was.
Like time travel.
Yeah, it was. The wallpaper was the exact same print. The furniture was there.
Wild.
Hadn't seen this stuff. I walked away from it. And boom. And Roseanne and I just went back to having a ball.
Yeah?
Yeah.
It came right back.
And I guess we did 8 shows or something.
Yeah.
Like yeah, it came right back when we had grandchildren to worry about, new characters.
Yeah.
But, yeah, as long as I was hanging with her, I was always doing the right thing.
Yeah. It was on the page, too, right?
Yeah.
The writing
yeah.
and everything.
Yeah.
Well, I hope she's okay.
I do too.
In terms of like doing these comedies with, like, what was it like working with McBride? Because I watched all the Gemstones and I love them, and I had Edie in here, and he, you know,
yeah,
Danny, like, I've talked to him too, but he's a funny fuck.
Yep. He's not a professional funny man in the sense that he's not always on.
Right.
He just says funny things.
And he's, there's something about his demeanor, though. Like, he's got this weird cockiness that is so undercut by his, like, ridiculousness. And it's a very unique zone.
Yeah, he really minds himself for being a prick.
Yeah, right.
He goes to depth.
But somehow he's sympathetic.
Yeah.
Because he's such an idiot.
Yeah.
And not dumb, but just sort of like he's going to fuck it up somehow.
It's a great trick.
It is a good trick. I don't know how he does it.
But he's got some imagination. These guys he went to school with, the North Carolina School of the Arts, all hang together, write together. And they bought a Sears, or renting a Sears, an old Sears.
The shopping center?
Yeah. And a studio is in there. Everything is in there.
That's where you guys shot?
Some of it, and a lot on location.
They bought a Sears?
I don't know if they bought it, but they're renting it, and it's a movie studio.
Down in where? South Carolina?
Yeah, in Charleston.
No kidding.
Yep. It's just swell.
And he lives out on an island, I think, over there.
Yeah.
And what's the other guy's name? Green?
David Gordon Green.
Yeah, he's kind of a genius too, huh? And Toby.
Jody Hill.
Jody Hill, yeah. But when you got that gig, when you looked at that stuff, were you familiar with his stuff from other
stuff? Not really. So just by reputation. And
right.
I'd seen a couple of things. But it was funny. It was a great concept.
Yeah.
And I go, and I just got lost my job. Roseanne had just gotten canned.
Right.
But the next day I got the script. I said, sure.
Yeah. And now you're doing both.
Doing two, yeah.
Yeah. And are you guys doing more of the Gemstones?
Yeah. We start again in February.
That's great. And you feel like you feel strong? You feel good? You like your work?
Yeah. And I'll be staying in the same house in South Carolina, so that's down. I don't have to worry about anything.
Yeah.
I like it there.
Yeah.
The people are wonderful,
and that makes it
and
easier.
It's always fun on set.
It's so funny. How many people in your life say this to you? Like, come on, it's great, John. Stop it. No, it's good.
Too many. Tell them to mind their own fucking business.
Oh my God. So what? All right. So what do you do with the rest of your day? How's that pan out for you?
I've got to go back to the hotel.
Yeah.
Get my stuff, take it back home, get some other stuff, and go back to the hotel because we got run out. I'm in Pacific Palisades.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
With the fires?
Yeah.
Are they right there?
That would have been a good excuse.
To what?
I can't make it, Mark.
Yeah, yeah. I might house might burn down.
I don't have anything to say.
You could have.
Yeah. My house might burn down.
Is this scary to you? It's scary, right?
No.
Yeah.
We're safe.
Oh, okay.
I got... stuff that I need, my dog,
yeah,
and we're safe.
That's my fear is like, how the fuck am I going to get these cats out of this house? Dogs are good because they're like, come on, boy, and they come. Cats are like, come on, you're going to burn up.
Yell louder.
Yeah,
we dig it.
We don't care. Try and get us in a box. Well, it's great talking to you.
Yeah, thanks, Mark.
I think we had a lot to say, and I'm glad you came.
I am too. This was fun.
Good.
And I like meeting you.
I like meeting you too, man. John Goodman. I don't know what to expect from anybody on this show. That was really something. It's a deeper place. A more, thoughtful, self-aware, a little heavy, a little darker than, I certainly identified with it. And it was certainly great to talk to him. The Conners airs Tuesdays on ABC, and I was very happy to talk to John. Okay, now let's play three chords, maybe four. Three chords, maybe four. Thank you. And Zorro.com offers amazing customer service from real people based in the U.S. Visit Z... oh.
Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.